Hi, this is Peter Hook from Joy Division and New Order, and you're listening to CFRC 101.9 Rock the House, baby.
CFRC's funding drive is now underway and running through December 31st. Donate today and get amazing CFRC prizes. For every $5 you donate, earn a ticket towards one of our weekly raffle draws featuring gifts from wonderful local businesses including Harper's Burger Bar, Hotel Wolf Island, Improbable Escapes, Kingston Canadian Film Festival, KPP Concerts, Long & McQuaid, Martello Alley, and Novel Idea. Enjoy the benefits of donating. Give today via cfrc.ca.
All right, you're listening to CFRC 101.9 FM. You were here on the CFRC Live Sessions. I'm your host, Rue, and today we're joined by a special guest. Adam is joining us, but you perform as Thunderclap.
Yes.
So let's start by telling people about that name. I mean, I love it. It's so dynamic. Thunderclap.
Good. I'm glad you like it. Oh, it's just an homage to an old band I was in, Rainbow Thunderbolts, and this little thing, a dear friend of, he used to do a thing called the Thunderclap. We love him, and we care about him, whatever. So, anyways, it's a, Thunderclap is homage to that, those two things, anyway, so.
Okay, and you're joining us here today in Kingston, having driven in all the way from Niagara.
Mm-hmm. It's like a 4-hour drive, I didn't even realize. And I thought it was like north of London, I was totally wrong. It's not north of London at all.
No, not at all. A bit further east to Kingston.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I had a nice drive and all that, so.
Okay. Yeah. Well, welcome to Kingston. And thanks for dropping by CFRC. Mm-hmm. We know you're playing a show tonight as well. I mean, the video will come out a bit later, but people might have caught you at the Toucan when we were recording this.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Well, I hope some people show up there tonight. And I don't think I've ever played there. No, I haven't played there before. But I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be great.
I feel like Toucan would just be a wonderful raucous vibe that would kind of fit the style of your music as well, because there's a lot of energy. It's sort of like held at the seams and kind of just like the energy is just bursting, coming out and stuff like that. So I just want to give people an idea of the sort of music you make. How would you describe it?
Well, whenever anyone asks me, I say it's a theatrical type of folk music. You know, it's a lot of storytelling and what I do and such, and a lot of dynamics. You know, I've learned to put, to love and to really embrace dynamics in my music, meaning, you know, the hills and valleys of the music.
For sure.
Take people on a little trip, as it were.
Yeah. I mean, I was going to say, I find like, I saw a couple of videos of you performing and things like that, and it's very engaging for sure. Like, you draw the audience in, like you said, they're like hills and valleys, it starts and stops, and it's a very involved process. Like, it's not just you playing to an audience, it's you kind of, it's almost like sit around the fire and like you're going to tell a story to a rhythm to them.
I'd like to think so. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. And I feel like the Toucan is a good place for that kind of vibe as well.
Well, you never know. Some audiences are hit and miss, and sometimes they love you and sometimes they hate you.
Yeah, it could go either way. Also, just talking about some of the music that you're going to be playing here for us today, what's the first song that you're planning to play?
Its working title is Over and Over. It's a song about mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
We all make mistakes.
Definitely.
We all make mistakes, and this song is kind of embracing my mistakes and confessing my mistakes. And, I'm never asked about the song, so you're putting me on the spot here, but I conclude that at least my friends are there, and it's my friends that have pulled me through, and it's my friends who've also forgiven me for my mistakes. Mm-hmm. It's my friends and family, you know, that pull you through at the end of the day and such.
A cathartic experience.
Yes. Yes.
Well, Let's let our listeners listen to that song right now, here on CFRC.
When I was 5, I cut my neighbor's hose in half, I don't know why. I'd verbally abuse my brother too, I'd steal his Playboys and hide them with my toys. I continuously put myself in pain by making bad character choices. La 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 la, la. Then I do it again, then I pray for some way that I can manipulate time in my favor. It's love that I wouldn't try. It's just perhaps I didn't know any better. If if I could do it again, I'd watch less TV and ingest way less drugs and act a rogue for once and spend more time with my family. But only my true friends could ever know that I've paid for all these misdeeds 10 times and more, over and over and over and over. When I was a young man, I cheated a girl, and it destroyed her world. While catcalling some hookers, I sideswiped an old man that was driving his car. I fled the scene in my van. I started to panic, I know I'd done wrong, so I staged an accident with witnesses looking on. La 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 la. Indeed, parts of my life saw my loved ones in strife. Yes, lies and alibis were quite general. It's been said I have angels on call. Like a SWAT team, they rush in and cushion my fall. If I could do it again, I'd watch less TV and ingest way less drugs and act a rogue for once and spend more time with my family. But only my true friends could ever know that I paid for all these misdeeds 10 times and more, over and over and over and over. If you are not growing, you are wilting away like a great oak unrealized. In your eyes, am I dying? Hey, is my image reflecting off any surface you see? In your eyes, am I dying? I don't want to fade. Don't let me slip away. If I could do it again, I'd watch less TV and ingest way less drugs and act a rogue for once and spend more time with my family. But only my true friends could ever know that I paid for all these misdeeds 10 times and more, over and over and over.
Welcome back, everyone. You were just listening to Thunderclap, and do you want to tell us a bit about the song we just played?
Yeah, it's called Bon Voyage, Sweet Chicken.
Right.
And yeah, it's a song about my, I always preface it, it's a song about my roommate. And a little funny thing that happened about that song is right after I wrote it, I was traveling down the street in my hometown in Niagara Falls, and I got pulled over by the police. And I forget what they pulled me over for, but they came over to my passenger side window and they saw my lyrics, brand new lyrics on the seat. Mm-hmm. And he says, do you know what we pulled you over for? And I, no, I don't know. Tell me what's going on. And they said, well, they got past that and they said, they're more interested on the lyrics on the seat. And they said, what's going on with these? Is this a drug list? Is this a list of drugs? What are you, a drug runner? Are you distributing drugs? Are you selling drugs? What's going on? Chewy. It looks like a list of drugs to me. Chewy, bite, fluff, toot. What are these? A list of drugs? I'm like, what? No, no, it's not a list of drugs. These are, believe or not. And he started to get more forceful. Yeah, this looks like a list of drugs. What's, where are you going right now? Where are you headed? And I'm like, no. These are lyrics, believe it or not. And I had to sing it to him. He said, or no, he didn't demand. He said, no, because he was making me nervous, like I am now. And I said, well, I'll sing it to you. These are not drugs. Chewy, bite, fluff, toot, jump, run, scratch. Chewy, bite, jump, run, squee. Chewy, bite, fluff, toot, jump, run. He said, okay, everything checks out. You're free to go. Anyway, that's my story. But it's a true story. It's so silly. But yeah.
And One thing that really stuck out to me, especially with that song, is that you have a very, as you described it before, a very dynamic style when it comes to playing the guitar. Is there anybody like specific that influences that, or is that completely original?
Well, I haven't had many lessons, so I think, I mean, it's kind of derived from country, a little bit of country, mm-hmm. like picking and stuff like that. And even though I'm not a good country picker, I think far from it, but I was always just a certain guitar set can do double work on the guitar. Like they'll do a bass line,
yeah,
and they'll start adding in a melody with instrumental guitar work. And mm-hmm. from my little bit of practicing that I've done and trying to do this myself, I did get better, and I was able to do, you know. So it derives from pure old finger picking, mm-hmm. you know. So that's where my style comes from.
Anyone specific that really inspired you?
Back in the day? I think a guy I heard once that really inspired it was like maybe Stan Getz, who's in jazz. Are you aware of Stan Getz?
Yeah, Bossa Nova. How do you know? Anyone else?
Anyone, you know, Django Reinhardt. I love him. It's not like I play like him, but there's a little... I think he's a little bit of him is rubbed off on me in a little bit of a way, again, because I don't claim that I'm a good guitarist. I might be an interesting guitarist, but that's it.
I do hate to break it to you, but Stan Getz is bossa nova, which is a type of jazz. But he does a lot of the sort of like classical bossa nova guitar picking sounds that you hear in that style of jazz. So that really? is a very valid right. influence, because okay. they do a whole lot of like twiddly stuff with the guitar.
Twiddle-dee-dee?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And what's next for you? You mentioned that after tonight where you're playing the toucan, mm-hmm. you've got some, you're lining up some shows.
I'm playing Hamilton tomorrow, and then I go on, I have a bunch of shows coming up, but I go on about a month long tour, mm-hmm. Starting around May 16th, out east to New Brunswick and back, and then out to Vancouver and back.
Mm-hmm.
And this is my first time going out to Vancouver and back, so that's kind of neat. And after the tour, I just have lots of videos that are kind of half in the can right now, that music videos and a documentary.
Mm-hmm.
That I've been working on, the final cut. I need to be done in the next few months and be done with it, but I'm going to put in some, hopefully, film festivals and stuff like that. A few, and I can't work too much on it because I spent too much of my own money on it already.
And what is the documentary about? What does it follow?
It's called Blank Slate. It's inspired by a Christmas song I put out last year called Blank Slate, about the derelict and downtrodden side of Christmas. And I got a small grant from the city of Niagara Falls to make this documentary about the growing homeless situation in the Niagara area.
Yeah.
Of course, it's a situation that's going on all over Canada and the world.
Yeah.
But, I was it's affected us all, and it's affected me enough that I wrote a song and finished the documentary about it.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything that you can tell us about, like, what's in the documentary, or is it and find out?
I can tell a bit about it. I preface the documentary. I'm the narrator, and I tell a bit of my story and why I've come to care about these things, mm-hmm. and my experience. And I do interviews with 13 to 15 homeless individuals in the Niagara area,
mm-hmm.
as well as three or four individuals in outreach programs.
Right, right.
And then we do a bit of exploring in the subject throughout.
Okay.
Exploratory. We don't claim to come up with the answers, of course. Wouldn't that be naive?
Yeah, of course. All right, and now we've got another song of yours that we're going to play for our listeners here. This song is called Bon Voyage, Sweet Chicken, and hope you enjoy.
I had a roommate and her name was Chicken. She was a rascal, sweet. She wore fluff pants and watched me shower and liked when I checked her knees. Combing her hair was her only vice. She didn't do drugs, that was nice. Every night when I'd get home, she'd be at the door singing the song for me. Chewy bite, fluff, jump, run, scratch. Chewy bite, jump, run, squeeze. Chewy bite, fluff, jump, run, scratch. Chewy bite, jump, run. Shake it, get your right squeeze. And one day, like any other day, the chicken just had to leave. A cardboard cloud rode down on a rainbow and beamed chicken into a seed. Everyone there on board was glad to have a new friend who was super rad. As they flew off into space, the star of the show looked back singing this to me. And they were singing, Chewy bite, thump, jump, run, scrat. Chewy bite, jump, run, squeak. Chewy bite, thump, jump, run, scrat. Chewy bite, jump, run. Kick, 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 jump, bite, squeak. Believe you me, I think she knew how good she had it here. I feel that good life helped her bloom into the upper sphere. A bigger thing's out there. Explosive spurts of magic everywhere. Now she spends all day in the playground with all you can eat whipped cream. Squishing in the sun while the wind blows her hair. She swims when she's not climbing trees. And look who's there, the plant space spider, cheetah mouse, they all live in a house. And hey, there's Laser, Taco and a cowboy, showing home movies of Chicken's old family. And they're all singing. Chewy bite, bump, jump, run, scratch. Chewy bite, jump, run, squeeze. Chewy bite, bump, jump, run, scratch. Chewy bite, jump, run. Kick, 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 jump, bite,
squeeze. And we're back, CFRC Live Sessions. I'm Rue. We just heard a Thunderclap song called Bon Voyage, Sweet Chicken. Now, I love that there's a bit of an almost surrealist touch to a lot of your songs going on. I mean, when people started listening to that song, I'm not sure if they would necessarily have known going into it if you hadn't told us already that it was about, you told us behind the scenes, actually, your cat.
It's about my sweet little cat, Chicken, who's passed away, unfortunately. We were so broken up about it that... that's one song that wrote itself.
Mm-hmm.
Many songs I have to work really, really hard to finish a good song. But this one wrote itself and was very broken. I'd like write a line and then cry, write a line and cry, and then write a line and then cry. But it would just bam, bam, bam. And it wrote itself.
What an experience. But yeah, Chicken lived on in the song.
Yeah, she really. I wrote two songs about Chicken, but that song, that's kind of my favorite. It's like, and magically a crowd favorite when I play it and such.
I can totally see why. And like you told us before, you've also got the little sheets with the chorus written around that you pass along. And I just love the idea of everyone kind of singing along to that chorus.
It's very sweet when people, and it's like touches my heart when I hear, you know, a crowd singing it, sometimes small crowd, sometimes big crowd, but it's like, oh, wow. What's very, again, magical about it is that new crowds that've never heard a song, they'll catch on right away and start singing it. It's kind of remarkable, actually.
Yeah, it's a very fun and spontaneous kind of song, too.
It's nice when a project, like, takes on a life. It's I don't own it anymore. You know, I don't own it. It takes on a life of its own.
Yeah, for sure. And I love that. I guess what also catches people's ear about it a little bit is that there's that surrealist, almost sort of absurdist touch to not just that song, but then a lot of your songs as well. And that kind of brings me to the album that you put out last year. Strange Songs for Strange Times. And you recorded that album with an AM radio host.
I got the participation of one of the most popular AM late night AM talk show in the world was called Coast to Coast with Art Bell, or Coast to Coast since Art Bell's died. It's George Norrie, and he's like, this show, it plays on like AM, it's all to all different stations across the world because it's so highly syndicated. It's just I think it was taken away. It's not in Canada anymore ever since the pandemic. I don't know what happened. It can be a controversial show, so I think something happened. Canada like kicked them off the air. But before that, I've been listening to it for like me and my friends for like 20 years. It's on like 11 p.m. till like 4 in the morning. Okay. They talk about paranormal issues and aliens and metaphysical issues and science, future of science and such. So it's like the soundtrack of my mind. So we know it so well. So long story short, it was a real big treat to somehow reach out to this guy.
How did that happen?
We just came up the idea because it was a collection of my strangest old and new songs that wouldn't it be perfect? I don't know how it came about, but wouldn't it be perfect if I reached out to this guy and he agreed to be involved? And sure enough, that's what happened. And now it's like Strange Songs from Strange Times with your host, George Norrie.
Amazing.
Yeah. It's like a little bit of a crown jewel
for myself. I guess it adds a little touch of strangeness to the album as well.
You got it.
How many albums do you have out there where you have like, in it? I can think of maybe a couple of hip hop albums that have that sort of thing where you have like a radio host introducing the song as you go into it, but not very many.
Yeah, he doesn't really introduce the songs as he narrates poems out of poems and funny little interludes that I've written, strange or funny interludes or narration, poems and such. Yeah.
Poems, stories, little narrations. Right, it does feel like a bit of a collage of thoughts, ideas, feelings just put into album form.
I would say so. Yeah, it's very much so. Again, hills and valleys, lots of dynamics.
Definitely. And so you're taking this album on tour really soon, aren't you?
Essentially, yeah. Then when I tour this, but hopefully it won't be the only tour that I tour this album because I'm really just getting started. Mm-hmm. As you know, and I'm sure you, if you don't know, well, I'm telling you now.
I go now.
But it's, you know, if you do an album right, it takes a lot of resources, a lot of money, start to finish. And as you may or may not know, the music industry is quite devastated.
Yeah.
And, there's not much money out there, and it's hard to make money, and yet musicians must go on. The show must go on, whether there's money or not, because we're addicted to the art form, and, you know? Just like a visual artist must go on, or a filmmaker who doesn't have money, he must go on. He's got to make a film no matter what. Mm-hmm. And artists, actors must go on, so on and so forth.
So where can people see you this summer?
Well, most cities between Niagara Falls and Montreal, and most cities between Niagara Falls and then Vancouver.
Yeah, and that's
so
one
all the major stops,
spot.
All the major capital cities, I guess you could say, and of the provinces.
Yeah, sounds like a fun, exhausting but fun tour.
It's going to be a little scary because I never toured alone before.
Okay.
And so again, you can run into hostile or meany audiences who don't want you there. But hopefully I'll be well received generally across the board.
And when you're performing, it's just you live, isn't it? It's just you, a guitar, and a lot of stories.
A lot of stories and my Wurlitzer. I bring a Wurlitzer electric piano and a few other little instruments. But yeah, largely piano, guitar, and singing stories.
Okay, amazing. Yeah. So if people want to sort of keep up with stuff that's going on with you, where can they like find you online and stuff like that?
Oh, yeah. So please, thunderclap.ca will take you to everything. But please, if you want to support your modern artist, modern musician, you can follow me at Spotify, Thunderclap, all caps, with an exclamation mark.
Thunderclap.
Yeah, on Spotify. And, follow me on Instagram, Thunderclapisms, and YouTube. Check me out on YouTube.
Amazing. So we'll go out with one last song of yours now.
Sounds wonderful.
Is this also from the latest album?
This is not. This is a brand new song that I just had to play because it's just so much fun.
Okay, amazing.
And it means a lot to me. It's called Be Devastated No More. And I think we become inconsolable. Let's say you get a fight with someone. Mm-hmm. Someone hurts your feelings, or maybe something really bad happens, and we become inconsolable. We've all been there.
Yeah,
devastated. You're crying. You're just beside yourself. And then maybe suddenly you have to go to work. Maybe you have to go have a meeting with someone. Maybe you have just something that, just cannot be diverted. You have to make it to that appointment, but you're devastated.
The absurdity of it strikes you.
How do you pull yourself together? How do you pull in your emotions? And so In the song, I talk about the will of the actor, the concentration that an actor must have. And it's that type of focus and that type of concentration that you need to... This is not happening. I am fine. I can pull myself together and go on with my day and try to act normal and, you know, and try to continue on.
All the world's a stage.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. We're going to leave you on CFRC stage right now, right here. Before we go into that, I just want to ask, this is like new material and all that stuff. Mm. Are we working up to an album? Is there something people should be looking out for in the future?
Mostly, I'm always working up to albums, but mostly a lot of video work, a lot of exploratory work with music videos and long form music videos / short form films.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so a lot of video work and such, and cultivate my social media and all this.
So we had the album that just came out last year. You've got music videos in the works, some
that are
coming out.
For the next year or so,
yeah. The documentary as well, which we're all really looking forward to. Mm-hmm. And you're going on tour, Thunderclap. Let's put you on the stage one last time for that last song. Let's go right into it. Thanks so much for joining us, Thunderclap.
Lovely, thank you so much.
Yeah.
Pleasure.
Why does everything bad seem to happen all at once? Well, it's the perfect time to ask ourselves, what is a lie and what is true? Find that little Gary Oldman inside of you, and look a bit more, you'll find Marilyn Wilt Defoe too. All you need is the worth things you never asked for, and here they come, all of them marching through your door. And I'm looking in your eyes, I see your eyes are glazing over. Good job on shoring up the dam for everyone, but what can be done when you're devastated? We're all devastated for sure. So devastated. Be devastated no more. Why you? Why now? Why me? Why then? When you're balancing the family, your work, and your friends, you're at a funeral, losing control of yourself. You must pretend that you are someone and somewhere else. And I'm looking in your eyes, I see your eyes are glazing over. Good job on shoring up the dam for everyone, but what can be done when you're devastated? We're all devastated for sure. So, so devastated. Be devastated no more. Why's everything but seem to happen all at once? Well, it's the perfect time to ask ourselves, just what would Arnold do? Yeah, what would Arnold Schwarzenegger do if he were in our shoes? What would Pee Wee Herman do if Pee Wee had the blues? They'd be showing us what's funny but our crying and our drooling. But now I see that you're aghast, so you get a pass. And when you're mad and distressed, don't go mailing your grievances yet. Cause although it's hard to bite your lip, just take a day or two to think about it. Devastated. Yeah, we're all devastated for sure. So, so devastated. Be devastated. so devastated, so devastated.
Thunderclap here. You're listening to 101.9 CFRC. Yeah!
Today on Wings, think computer games are just a boy's world? Think again. Brenda Laurel deeply transformed the gaming and computer worlds from their early days, and she got her start in theater. She advocates for diversity and inclusiveness in video games, and she pioneered virtual reality. Her PhD dissertation, published in 1986, was titled Toward the Design of a Computer-Based Interactive Fantasy System, and it formed the basis of her 1993 book, Computers as Theater. Brenda told her life story to Suki Wessling, host of the podcast The Babblery, and Suki shared part of that longer interview with Wings.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings.
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
What I hope we can do as culture makers, you know, is to shape our culture in such a way that lifts up compassion. And that's a tough call. It's always harder to do the good thing.
This is Suki Wessling, host of The Babblery at babblery.com. You're listening to my interview with groundbreaking game interaction designer Brenda Laurel. Laurel is an unlikely tech entrepreneur. She has a PhD in theater. But that unlikely pairing led to a perspective that changed the early video game industry for the better, especially for girls.
While I was studying for my PhD generals in 1975, I met a fella who had been a friend of my boyfriend in high school named Joe Miller. He passed away about 10 years ago. He was, you know, he turned out to be just, you know, head of Sega and all kinds of stuff. Very important guy in the computer game business. In 1975, he was working at Battelle Memorial Institute, which is a research lab in Columbus, and he was the computer guy. And I remember he took me to his studio, his lab, to show me what he was working on, and these images from outer space were painting themselves slowly across the screen. And I literally fell to my knees and said, I don't know what this is, but I want a piece of it. This is amazing. You know, I had this, oh my God moment. Well, a year later, he and his colleague, John Powers, left Battelle to start a little computer game company in 1976 in Columbus, Ohio. And it was a little box with 2K of RAM, 2K of RAM. That connected to your computer with you could use an alphanumeric keyboard. The cool thing was it was loaded from cassette tape, so you could synchronize audio, which was fun. But the unfortunate thing about 2K loaded from cassette tape is that a player couldn't make a choice that made a difference. You had to have converging nodes at the end of a segment of code. Mm-hmm. So that's how I got passionate about interaction design. Mainly, how do we design things that allow people to take action in a virtual environment or a computer game that has real consequences, mm-hmm. that changes the world, that changes the plot? And I came to understand that when somebody plays a computer game, they're really engaged in time-displaced collaboration with the designer. And that's the designer's job to design a world in which that person is predisposed to make dramatically interesting choices. So at the end of a, you know, a day of play, you can tell a story about what happened that's a really interesting story. That's so important. It's so canonical, I think, to making a good computer game, a good VR experience, anything interactive, that if you can construct that dramatically interesting story when you've gone through it, it's a success. And ideally, you should be able to construct an entirely different story going through that same world multiple times. Mm-hmm. So that became sort of the thing I was about in the game business and later in the VR business.
Brenda Laurel found her calling in the nascent game industry, where she applied her theater training to interactive entertainment.
At the time, we're talking early to mid-70s, there was a big trend in the theater for audience interaction, hair, a Dionysus in 69. These things were on Broadway. Mm-hmm. There were people running around doing that kind of work. And I had worked with an actor friend to write an interactive scenario of a play about Robin Hood. And we staged it around the lake at the center of the campus. And the kids would follow the minstrel along to these various places, and a scene would unfold. But the rule that we had with the actors and the team was, whatever the kids said, you needed to take it in, make it matter in the plot. And that was just amazing. So the computer game stuff, a year later, I mean, I already had my feet wet in this notion of interactivity and live theater. And the idea of being able to do it in a fantasy world was big.
It seems like one of the limitations that you came up against early on was just the technical limitations, just the RAM.
Yeah.
You know, when we got
16K, we thought we made jokes like, we're going to do War and Peace, man, you know, so. On an 1802 processor.
So after that game, what was your path?
The little company that my friends had started was superseded by an upstart in California called Atari. And so our company was going bankrupt, and the boys were all moving to California. So I'd never been to California. I said, okay, I'll go. There are jobs at Atari. And when I started at Atari, I was manager of educational software or something, even though it was a game company. I ended up being the director of strategy and production for the Atari 800 computer. And that's how I started to get into trouble at Atari, because the president of the corporation wanted me to spend all my budget porting computer games from the game machine to the personal computer. And one day I went into the office of the president of the division, the computer division, and I said, look, this is stupid. These games don't run as well, for one thing. For another thing, you have a new product that you're trying to differentiate from your game machine. Let me use your chalkboard and show you all the things we could be doing. Personal finance, right? Personal well-being, in addition to games, word processing, a spreadsheet. You know, there are all these opportunity spaces that we're not getting into, and it's going to kill this product. And he said to me, your salary's doubled and you report to me.
Here you are. You come to California and suddenly you're managing. And I'm guessing, just projecting here, that it was mostly men. What was that experience like?
It was funny. I have a story I will tell that has a bleep in it. I was chairing a meeting at one point with heads of engineering and marketing and stuff for some of the products we were working on. And they were all men. And I'm sitting at a long table, and they're all chatting away and kind of ignoring me. And finally I said, you know, hey, guys, we got a f***ing meeting to run here. And dropping the F-bomb got their attention. They never gave me a hard time again. So there was a sort of rowdy male impersonation period that I went through, you know, with these guys. Mm-hmm. That didn't continue to be necessary, but it was an interesting insight for me.
As a woman in a man's industry, Brenda Laurel was acutely aware of her gender. But instead of being held back by that, she leaned into her fascination with the difference between the ways women and men play and lead. We join her now as she founds and then moves past the conference that now defines the gaming industry.
I have a pretend brother. His name is Chuck. He has a company called Alter Ego. He's a stoner. He's shorter than I am. And when I was hosting the Computer Game Developers Conference, which I co-founded, one time I called and said, you know, I'm sick. My brother's going to take my place. So I got up in magnificent drag, including a really finely done beard, army jacket, you know, kind of crass guy. And all you have to do to impersonate a male is to narrow your pitch range. So right now I could be taken for a male without even lowering the volume because I'm not going like this. Right. So anyway, Chuck showed up and people that I knew well could not see that it was me.
What?
From a foot away. It was just great. It was really fun. And then I ran into Dan Button, who did Seven Cities of Gold and Mule, famous computer game designer. And Dan was in drag. And I'm joking. And I'm saying, oh, Dan, let's dance. And he said, my name is Danielle now. I am post-op. And I freaked out and ran back up to my room, took off all the crepe hair, put on some rhinestone earrings, came back down, you know. I felt awful about it. Danielle stayed a great friend of mine until she passed away, and she really inspired a lot of the work that I did with Purple Moon, but that's another story.
What would you say that emotion was that made you go back and dress in a more feminine way?
I guess because one could be thought to be making fun of somebody. And here's this woman who's gone through major surgery and hormones and really done the job. And here I am screwing around with crepe hair. And I felt cheap, and I felt like I could be seen as being, you know, making fun of her, mm-hmm. making fun of cross-dressing, making fun of queer people. And I sure didn't want to be that guy.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like, you know, you got really deeply involved. You said you started the conference. Can you talk a little bit about when you started in computer games, there was no industry really. So, what does it take to build up an industry like that? A conference is obviously one of them. One thing, one part.
Yeah, I think at the first Computer Game Developers Conference, it was Chris Crawford and me and John Powers and some other folks were at that first one. There were 50 people. And these were guys who were working at Atari. There really weren't many competitors to Atari until Activision showed up a few years later. A lot of us were just nerds, you know. But we had the idea that we had information we could exchange. We'd have great conversations. Let's have a conference. And it started really small. Chris, without our knowledge, sold the conference about 4 years into some conglomerate. And it got changed to the Game Developers Conference, which now has like, I don't know, 20,000 people come. Mm-hmm. Last time I went, I just couldn't handle it. It's kind of been taken over by marketing dweebs and finance people. But going back to your question, the way you make an industry out of it is you make a culture out of it. And you grab onto stuff that already exists in the culture and extend it. So hence the somewhat dubious practice of computer game companies licensing, you know, Hollywood movies and making games based on them. Now, like 40 years later, I look back and it's so ironic that I'm seeing movies based on computer games. It's just turned itself inside out.
Yeah.
Back in the game world, when I started a company to do games for little girls, we interviewed 1,000 little girls all over this country to understand play. Because in those days, that we started that company in 1997, girls weren't using computers. And one of the reasons for doing the research with girls was to figure out what it would take to get their hands on a computer and feel secure and safe about it without having this fear that they were going to break it or that they were doing something against gender norms because it was tech.
Yeah.
Because we knew it would make a huge difference in their individual and our collective futures. So that's really what stimulated me to go do that. That plus, you know, after 17 years of working with boy games, mm-hmm. for boys, little violent games, you know, stupid games, I really wanted to do. I finally got it together to say, okay, I'm in a spot. I can ask for the funding. We're going to make this happen. And we did.
On Wings, you're listening to Brenda Laurel, American video game designer, interaction designer, and researcher, speaking with Suki Westling, host of the podcast series, The Babblery.
So that was nice.
Brenda Laurel co-founded the very first company that produced games for girls, Purple Moon. They soon realized that in order to design for girls, they had to figure out what girls might actually want.
Backing up to the situation before you started the company, you're working in an industry that, you know, you just described in this way that's different from the industry now, because there are games for boys that are no longer like that. There's like a gender neutral section in the middle.
Yeah. Well, all the multiplayer games like Run of Warcraft, you know, the Rivendell stuff. There's a bunch of gender inclusive work being done, especially in the multiplayer space. Mm-hmm. But also in the independent game design space in recent years, we've seen that I would guess the majority of the most successful games have been authored by gender nonconforming people.
Interesting. So, but let's go back to where you were with this hyper masculine environment. And was it generally accepted that these games were just for boys and that girls were a lost cause because they weren't using computers?
That's almost true. There were some exceptions. Women really enjoyed narrative adventure games. So Roberta Williams' work way back in the day. Girls liked Pac-Man a lot. I had a male engineer once tell me that that was because it was a game about an eating disorder. And I had to work really hard not to punch this guy. And girls, big insight for me was that girls tended to like, in the arcade days, first-person driving games.
Hmm.
And what turned out to be important is the first-person-ness, the first-person view, because generally speaking, females do less well than males at mental rotation under time pressure. Well, if you remember the old games, they're most of them side-scrollers. So already a female player has to do a mental rotation to follow the course of the game, plus a translation from the keyboard or the mouse to the plane of the screen. You're screwed. You can't win if you're, quote, normal in that way. And, of course, we're talking about, you know, bell curves. But in a first-person game, you've got the same edge as anybody else. And, by the way, girls can do mental rotation as well as boys when there's no time pressure.
That's interesting.
It is interesting. It's a brain-based difference that isn't just cultural. There aren't many of them, but that's one.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, there were some games that girls played, but mostly this was a culture built by men, by young men, for young men, sold in places where young men shopped,
mm-hmm.
period.
Yeah.
You know?
There's been a lot of exploration of the history of Radio Shack and its importance in the early computer industry, because so many of the kids, almost all of them boys, because it was a very girl-unfriendly space, were brought into technology through Radio Shack.
Yeah. I think a big change that happened in the game industry that helped it become more inclusive in a funny way is that the retail spaces changed. So when you started seeing stuff at Target or Kmart or Fry's even, you remember Fry's?
I loved Fry's.
I miss Fry's so much. Anyway, yeah, I think the change in retail spaces broadened the audience
mm-hmm.
a little bit. And it certainly made it possible to think about creating and succeeding in selling stuff that wasn't just for boys.
Mm-hmm. You said you started with research. What are some of the big takeaways that you had about the research on what girls might enjoy in games that was different?
Well, you know, at first we thought we're just going to ask girls, you know, what kind of games would you like to play, until we realized they didn't have any experience mm-hmm. with computer games. Most of them hadn't played at all. They watched their brothers play. So the real question was, how do girls and boys maybe play differently, period, mm-hmm. you know, in terms of play. So the mental rotation finding was a big one. Probably the most illuminating thing that we discovered is, and was well known probably to sociologists, is the differences in how girls and boys in U.S. culture tended to manage their social networks. So boys, and again, making generalizations mm-hmm. here that aren't yeah. universally true, boys tended to do direct competition. I can kick your ass, I can throw this ball farther, and then it's over. It may change who's popular. You know, if I'm the star quarterback and my best friend is going to get elevated socially along with me. So there's a kind of an org chart-like network for boys. For girls, it is really different. The tools that tend to be used are affiliation and exclusion, so that it's not what level of a hierarchy you're in. It's how many friends you have and which friends you have. And to increase your social status, you can either affiliate with a new friend, or you can cause an exclusion to happen among friends that are currently there. This probably sounds familiar to any woman listening to this program. We do this.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, when we're little, we play in groups of three girls and we take turns excluding one. That's how we roll.
I feel right? like you just sort of described why I was a child without that many friends.
Well, me too. But, you know, they're
good at this stuff. You know, it's
just I'm like, not either. I can remember it so well. And, you know, I see it when I give talks about this. Women light up mm-hmm. and they'll say, I'm 60 and this is still going on, yeah. you know, in my life. Mm-hmm. So there is something about that. And if you look at pygmy chimps, they do the same
wow.
thing. When they're hanging out in same sex groups, they use affiliation and exclusion, and they do it by grooming or holding your baby or, you know, whatever it is. It's the same behavior. I can remember I had all these primate books in my office, and whenever the press was around, the marketing guys would come running in and pull all the primate stuff off the shelves because they were afraid that we would offend Christian buyers.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Sum up your feeling of what happened when you created your company and brought girls into it. Did you feel at the end like you had done something, moved something in any direction?
Absolutely. I felt, and I still feel it. I still get email from these women who are now 35 or 30 who played my games and say, you changed my life, because the games were called Friendship Adventures and they had to do with issues like the one we just discussed. And in terms of both social status and self-esteem. So I felt very proud of the games. And so did all the people, mostly women, who worked for me in that situation and with me. My collaborator, Christy Rosendahl, was a co-founder of that company, and she did all the web work back when you had to roll your own. There were no tools, you know. Mm-hmm. So I was very proud of it. At the same time, Paul Allen, who had funded the company through Interval Research, was on the board. He decided that the grass was greener on the internet side of the fence. So they pulled their investment from the company. Just like I had 80 people to give a paycheck to the next day.
Wow.
And they just threw the big red switch. And we had been negotiating with Mattel to invest, even though Barbie is something I hate more than I can say, because of her, you know, instantiation of hegemonic values. But when they pulled the rug out from under us. We were in the process of shipping our eighth game. Our website, you know, in the first year was beating Disney in terms of hits and dwell time. But this fickle behavior on the part of a millionaire, I just was devastated. I was blown away. I got a half a year's pay. And I spent that year writing a very angry book, and then I burned it. And then I wrote a very good book called Utopian Entrepreneur, which I think of as my best book, even though people talk about Computers as Theater as an important book. Utopian Entrepreneur was really the lessons I took away about business, about how you can have goals to do social good and still manage to make a success of it. That was a very thoughtful year. And at the end of that year was when I was asked by Andy Davidson to come revamp the graduate media program at Art Center. Mm-hmm. And that changed my trajectory for the next 15 years. I was an academic until I retired. What we can do, what I hope we can do, is begin as and continue as culture makers, you know, as culture workers, to shape our culture in such a way through our efforts that lifts up compassion. You know, there's more than just fight or flight that gets us excited. Helping gets us excited. Loving gets us excited. Watching somebody's fortune turn from awful to good gets us excited. Read Shakespeare, you know. And it's up to us as culture workers, you, me, to create conditions in which we have alternatives to that kind of thinking that are compelling enough to draw people in. And that's a tough call. It's always harder to do the good thing.
I do. I want to.
It's always harder. And my advice to anybody who complains about it is suck it up. It's our job.
Tell you girls a story, I won't tell you a lie. Anything you want, you can do it just fine. Come on. Come on and rock the world. If they tell you you can't do it, you just turn it up and play like a girl.
Thanks to Brenda Laurel for the fun and inspiring conversation. You can find links to her work at BABBLERY.com.
Come on. Come on and rock the world. If they tell you you can't do it, you just turn it up and play like a girl.
The song Where the Magic Happens is by Stevia Spear on Bandcamp. Play Like a Girl is by June and Gene Millington, courtesy of the freemusicarchive.org.
2, 3, 4, hey, what's that sound? Kick your engines, run